Desire.
Hello, everyone. Hello. God, everyone seems a bit more lively now. Something about going out for lunch, having a beer. It's weird. Okay, hands up who's found some value in the workshop so far. Excellent. Hands up who'd like to share one little tidbit of information that they've learned from this workshop so far and how they think that could benefit their business. Who'd like to share with us? Okay, we're going to come down here.
I would say that I was probably the world's number one cynic when I came through the door. You've convinced me of the power of it, certainly yesterday, but even more so this morning. And I'm ready to get going. The number one thing that you've shown me is how you get going from a standing start, how you magic it out of nowhere.
Excellent. Thank you. That's excellent. Thank you very much. And can we just give a round of applause for that, please? Thank you. Now, don't be shy. Who would like to share with my subscribers about some of the success they've enjoyed this weekend? Excellent. So what I'm going to do, we're going to come down here, and then who else would like to share with my subscribers? And then down here, so we've got two, so we're going to come here, then here. Anybody else? Then here, three. Anybody else? Dean? Four, thank you. Anybody else? Okay, five at the top. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to do an intro on the flip video camera. And it kind of ties into what Mark was saying in the interview about facing your fears. Does anyone ever remember the first video I did on my blog when I talked about how... Do you remember, Alex? I talked about how scared I was about making a video. It took me 2 years to make a video in my business. 2 years. Because I was scared of it. And now I can just make videos on the fly because I've pushed through that fear and that barrier. So what I want to do before we get on with the session is I'm going to introduce on the flip camera. We'll pass it around down here. So we've got two people here. We're third person here with Damien. Then we've got Dean, who we've got at the back as well. And then we'll do this, and we'll post this on the blog, and we're going to take immediate action as well. So literally, while I'm presenting, James will upload this to the blog, we'll write a broadcast at interval, and we'll get it sent out to my list. Who thinks that's a good idea? Yeah? Give me a bit of an update in terms of what's going on. Everyone's staring at me now. This is pressure. Okay. Who can guess how I might start this video? Lee from lehighfrommcintyre.com. Why else might we say, Alex?
Don't take
no one. Very excited. Okay. Mark, would you mind? Do you mind grabbing the mic, the camera? Okay. So you know how to do this, don't you? So you just record me. If you press record, and then when we go over here, you just pass the camera to me, and I'll turn around. Okay. Turn around. Hi everyone, Lee here from lehighfrommcintyre.com, and we're here at the first ever Momentum Live workshop for Continuity Live. I'm going to say hello to the crowd, everyone. Can we turn around and just say a quick hello? Okay, you're really missing out. We're covering lots of awesome content here, and I just wanted to give you an update video in terms of what we've kind of been learning about. And rather than me telling you about what we've been learning about, I want to share some success stories in terms of what some of the subscribers and the customers here think. So if you pass me the camera, we'll go and just get a quick few stories from the crowd. So who wants to start us off? Okay, Mark, do you want to come over here with the mic? Okay. So do you want to introduce yourself and maybe just tell us a little bit about what you've learned and what you've experienced?
Yeah, sure thing, Lee. Darren-Todd.com. And I'd just like to say I've had a fantastic time here today, and I think you've actually over-delivered so much. And I know for a fact that what you've given here today will help me build a multi-million pound business without a shadow of a doubt.
Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it. A round of applause for Darren, I think. Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, my name's Sid Merwin. I think one of the biggest things that I found here was the intensity of the information, which was wonderful, and it really gave me the clue of how to continue. We all know how to start, but it's very hard to find someone that teaches you how to continue, and this is definitely your man for that.
Thank you. Round of applause. Thank you.
Hi, this is Damian Leon from TrafficProfitsOverdrive.com. Just want to say thank you, Lee, so much for teaching us how to provide more value to the marketplace and how to provide more value to affiliates as well, so we can kind of relax and actually focus on what's important, and that's providing great quality content for people. So thank you so much, Lee.
Thank you, Damien. Really appreciate it. And are there any more? Dean, you want to jump on?
So it's Dean Holland from deanholland.com. I think what I always get from your workshops, Lee, is that you give people not only how things to be done, but you also lay it out in a simple way. And the thing I always come away from it is that you've got to go away and take fast action, and when you do, you see fast results. So,
excellent. Thank you very much, Dean. I really appreciate it. Excellent. And one more at the back.
Hi, everyone. This is Maddy from madaction.com, and I just want to say that I've learned so much about continuity. I had no idea how it's done. The best way about everything in this workshop was everything was laid out in steps, and it's actionable content. It's content that you go home and you implement straight away. So if you're thinking about coming to Lee's next workshop, don't think and just come down, and it's great. The networking part is great. Some of the biggest names in the industry are there, and I really urge you to come down. And it's been great. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And if you're not at this workshop, which you're obviously not, you should definitely come to the next one because I'm having a really good time. Say goodbye, everyone.
Ciao.
Bye. Okay, thanks very much. Lee McIntyre from lehighfrommcintyre.com, and I'll see you very soon. Bye for now. Okay. James, you want to come and grab that? Okay, is that fast action? Yeah? Do you think that'd be an okay thing to put on my blog?
Absolutely.
Okay, if we got that put on my blog and embedded on my blog right now, and wrote a broadcast very quickly in the interval and sent a broadcast, how many people here would want to comment on the blog saying they was having a good time? Yeah? How many people here would want to comment on the blog before my subscribers saying, I'm at the workshop, having a good time, or I'm just giving you honest feedback? Maybe that's what we should do. So maybe we'll get that on the blog in the interval, and if you wanted to leave a comment on your iPhone or on the computers at the back, we'll get that set up, and you can come and leave a comment. That'd be pretty cool. That'd be pretty much appreciated as well. Okay, what I want to do in this session is really is talk about some of the problems that you can have with continuity income. I debated a lot about whether to include this kind of module. How many times do you buy a course where they teach you about CPA and they have a module on what kind of problems you might have? Very rarely. Or when you buy a product on how to make money with ad swaps and they teach you about some of the problems you might have? Rarely, sometimes, but rarely. We've discovered all kinds of problems over the last 2 years with continuity businesses. And really what we want to do today is kind of lay out those kind of problems that you might experience and give you some kind of solutions to deal with them. Hands up here who's had a continuity program currently or in the past. So a few people. Keep your hand up if you've had kind of problems. James, do you want to shout out just some of the problems you might have had? You got the mic there.
Okay, where do you want to start? technical problems putting together the site, making it work from the sales page through to the fulfillment of the content. Do you want me to keep going?
Keep going.
Okay, so merchant account problems in terms of dealing with reserves, holdings, chargebacks, refunds. Also, the support ticket requests, handling with issues as they come up from people that are trying to access the membership site. Email deliverability, big issue, especially if you're using Fusion. Actually making sure that the content that we create is matched to the requirements of the people who join the program.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Dean, do you want to share some of your problems? I know you've had some problems, some issues. And by the way, this isn't to depress everybody. My kind of feeling is if I can give you the problems that you're going to have and then give you an action plan to deal with them, you're more well-equipped than 99% of the people out there. Does that make sense? So I want you to be aware of the problems, but also the opportunity. And look, if the problems are going to put you off, then to be fair, you'd probably get best getting put off now than when you get started. I'd rather instead you went into this with your eyes open. You know, we'll make more than $2 million this year, I'm sure, and the vast majority of that is from continuity income. And we're happy about that, but we are encountering problems, but we've learned how to deal with those problems along the way. So don't get disheartened or discouraged. Really, take it as an opportunity to overcome. Go ahead, Dean.
I think just to name one, because James covered most of it over there. I think you mentioned it yesterday. Is the fact of people not paying attention to what they're actually buying and what they're actually signing up for. And like you say, you know, you get the $97 charge or whatever the charge and everyone's going crazy. What the hell is this? You know, you're going to get that. So anyone that starts, don't panic about that. That's going
to
happen.
You know? And what kind of things do they say to you when they say them?
Some of it can't be said. Scammer, con artist, rip-off merchant, all this. You know, they tell us we put it in small print, even though there's not 1 ounce of small print on any of our pages. They tell us we hide it all. You know, they just invent their own thing and tell you that that's how you're running it. And you're like, well, show me. It's just not true.
Thank you, Dean. I really appreciate it. Thank you. This morning we went through the different session and we looked at some of the different elements in our business. How many different contact points do you think we have with the customer where we tell them about the continuity charge? Can you just shout them out? What kind of contact points do we tell them about the charge?
Thank you, Paige.
The email that goes out, the telephone message on the DVD, the second email that goes out, the sales video, the sales page, the order page. Blimey, people can't even order unless they tick a box that says, I agree to pay $97 a month. Yeah. They ring up a number and it tells them. They get a welcome email, it says. They go onto a thank you page and it says. Yet despite doing all of that, you're going to get customers who say they're not happy. And you have to be aware of that and have strategies to deal with it. Okay? And one of the most effective strategies is just to have the right mindset, because it will cripple your business. If you have the mindset where you just view, you focus on the negatives and you focus on the 5% of customers who are really unhappy, or the 2% who are really unhappy, and not the 95% who are massively happy, then all of a sudden you'll get really down about it, you won't want to build your business, and all of a sudden you just think, I've had enough. Does that kind of make sense? We're just trying to bring the mic down here for Dean, just to get Dean's kind of input on that. Because I know Dean's been running his program, and I know he's had some problems like we had.
Yeah, something I just wanted to mention, because if these guys are going to go away and start their own program, something that I had to overcome myself when I first started it, when I first got it all running, I felt that I didn't want to make it too clear how you could cancel or how to refund or something, because I thought, well, you don't want to force people to cancel, you know, make it that blatant that you throw it into their face. But now, you know, I'm like, I'm even making a new sales video where I'm telling people how to cancel in the sales video before they buy. And we've even put a button in the membership area so they can even just click that and cancel themselves with one click of the mouse now, you know. So all I want to say is just throw it into their face how to cancel. Because if they're going to cancel, they're going to cancel. And if they can't find a way to cancel, then they're going to charge back or refund anyway. So.
Thank you, Dean. Excellent. And that's the real key distinction. We talked about that earlier, didn't we? We talked about how when I was running Standing Start Profits, every time I told the customer they were going to be charged, what happened? We had cancels come in. And all of a sudden, you build up that mindset where you think, God, if I send out an email telling people there's a charge coming, or telling people they remember, we get 10% or 5% cancel every time. So what do? Your tendency is to do the opposite. Your tendency is just not to contact people. And all of a sudden, you think, well, hang on, I fully disclosed the continuity, people knew about it, okay, I'm not going to send those emails. Because every time you do, you get the cancels. But what Dean's saying is so right. The people who are going to cancel are the people who are going to leave anyway. And if you bill them, half of them are going to charge back, and that's going to put your merchant account in jeopardy. So really, the much better strategy, there's two strategies. The first strategy is where you hope people don't know. And the second strategy is where you tell people constantly that they're being billed, and you lose the people who are going to cancel anyway. You lose the people who don't know. You lose the people who are going to charge back and take up a massive volume of support tickets. And what happens with the people who stay? They have increased retention, massively increased consumption of the site. They love the site most. They stay for longer. So don't fall into the trap of thinking, they've signed up, I've disclosed it, now we don't have any communication. Instead, take the alternative view where you over-communicate. And there's subtle ways to do it. How many people here have heard the video earlier and heard that we mentioned the $97 charge in the telephone message, rather? Just put your hand up if you heard that. And we didn't just say, we're going to bill you $97 a month. You express it as a benefit. Look, we're going to bill you $97 a month, which is excellent. Because that means you're going to receive A, B, C, and D. In the example of the A5, if Audi contact me and say, look, Lee, we're going to bill you $97 a month, and we're going to give you an Audi to drive every month, I'm going to be happy with that. So over-communicate the benefit to people always. So let's look at some of the problems we've had. First problem, increased support tickets. Huge problem. When we launched the Gold program, and when we launched the Point and Click program, we realized that you're going to get a factor of quadruple number of tickets if you sell a continuity program, than if you sell a straight-up ebook. You're going to get four times the volume of tickets, roughly. So if you're selling a $27 ebook and you migrate your business to selling a $1 trial, you'll get four times the number of support tickets. You're going to get tickets such as, I didn't want to be charged, I didn't know I was going to be charged, what's this offer all about, how do I cancel? You're going to get all those kind of tickets, and it's going to be hard work. In fact, Matt, would you mind if we bullied these on the board? So bear in mind that if you're currently getting 10 tickets a day, now you're going to get 40. If you are currently, so we'll just put number one, increase support, and we'll do it on different pages. If you are currently getting 20 tickets a day, you'll get 80. Does that kind of fit with what you experienced, Dean? Yeah. James, is that kind of broadly similar to the increase that you got? Yeah. Okay. Just the comparison is hard. Okay, how many tickets do people think we get in Air Business per day, if you just shout out a number? 200? It's not that high. How many? 40? About 40 a day. We get about 40 a day. How many do you get, Dean? About 15, yeah. We get about 40 a day. And it's really consistent. We actually map them inside our Kickstart dashboard, which is one of our management metrics in our business. We map them out and we say, every day we get 40, 41, 39, 38. And it's always the same every day, unless something changes. Really interesting. So we get about 40 tickets a day. So there's solutions to this. If you're going to run your continuity program, the first step you need to do to solve this problem is just be aware of the upcoming increase. Just be aware of it. Make sure you've got resources to handle it. We massively messed up on our point-and-click coaching launch. We put in, I don't know, 700 or 800 members in a really short space of time. We had Bev on the support desk in South Africa, and I asked her to work extra hours over the weekend of the launch. Can anyone guess why that was the problem? Where do you think the volume of support tickets came in? Was it at the launch or was it after? It was on the day 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. We didn't anticipate that. We just ballsed up. So we took extra hours on the launch for the day we launched, and the day before, and the day after, and the day after. And when we launched, we hardly had any support tickets. Hardly any, apart from when does my DVD come? We had a few people saying, why are you charging international shipping to the UK, that kind of stuff. But generally, we still had about 40 to 45 tickets a day. But we had all this extra capacity on the help desk. But then it caught us completely unawares because the massive flood of tickets came on day 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, when people were billing. So the thing to write down here is to have extra capacity on the first billing cycle, especially if you're launching with a flood of new members. On the first billing cycle. So if you're just doing a really soft launch where you're putting 10 in every day, then that's not going to be a massive issue. But we did it where we did a free DVD and we put in like 250 on day one. So then 250 people all came up to the billing time at the same time, if that makes sense. So now we had 250 people sending us emails and about 30% cancelled. So we can see the extra volume we suddenly got on top of a normal volume. So be prepared to have extra capacity on the day that you charge customers. Very important. Okay. Another thing that you really want to do is write templated responses in anticipation. Templated responses. And just keep in mind that when you're running a continuity program, support is absolutely life critical. Because if things slip through the net and people get charged and they're getting recurring charges and it's because something on the help desk has gone wrong, you're going to know about it in a bad way. In a really bad way. Let's bring the microphone down here, Mark. You're going to know it about it in a bad way because people don't mind as much when you make a mistake of a $27 ebook. They mind a lot more when it's a recurring $97 charge and they get really passionate about it because they've had bad experiences in the past. They've signed up for continuity programs in the past and didn't like it, and now you're in that same bucket as them. Get your support right and just really have it planned in advance. Go ahead, Damon.
Just two quick ones. Do you take sort of a middle ground approach in terms of, like, if they complain that they were charged, quote, do you say, like, do you kind of nicely explain it, or do you just kind of, like, go with what they say, or how do you?
Okay, good question. So when people come to us and say, look, we've been charged, what's going on, what's the problem? What we actually do is we send an email, and we have it templated where we say, look, you signed up on this date, you signed up at this URL, please note on this URL you tick the tick box that says I'm going to be charged $97 a month. Therefore, you were billed on the 14th of the month, as per your terms and conditions. Any more problems, let me know. If you then come back and say, I want a refund, we give them a refund. But the first email is to educate. Okay? So when you write your template response, should we just have that as a... When people query the charge, don't automatically offer up the refund, because sometimes, do you know, about half the people come back to us and say, oh, I remember now. Fantastic. So educate with that first email. Look, if people come back and immediately ask for the refund, then maybe you give them the refund. But we have a templated response where we say, hi, name, you signed up on this date from this URL. Thanks very much. Any problems, let me know. My phone number is this. This is the extension or whatever. But we educate, and I'm not joking, half the people come back and go, oh, yeah, I remember. James was telling me ages ago, we had someone on the phone. Do you remember that guy you said was threatening, was being quite abusive? Was he a Marine or... Who's going to help me down? James rang me up and said, Lee, there's a really funny story. You've got to hear this. I was like, oh, brilliant. I was like, yeah, we had a Marine on the phone, on the answer phone, and he said he's going to hunt you down and kick your ass. I was like, God, James, that doesn't sound like a funny story. And he left a really abusive phone message, and he was really, God, you scammers, this is terrible. And then he sent an email like 20 minutes later saying, oh, really sorry, that was a different company. Please don't cancel my membership. And we get a lot of people like that. So when people come to you initially, don't be defensive, don't be like, yeah, blah, and cancel them. Just say to them, look, this is what you signed up for. Give them the login details as well if they've got a membership site. That's what we also do. We say, you signed up on this date, here's your login details, you're going to get billed. Do you know one of the biggest requests that we get on the support desk regarding continuity is people who think they've been billed when they haven't? So they must be on multiple continuity programs with different companies. They come to us and say, you scammers, I signed up for a 14-day trial, I cancelled, and you billed me. And we'll look in their account, and they haven't been billed. They were cancelled, but they haven't been billed, and they've got a support issue with some other company. That happens a lot. Someone posted a comment on, we talked about it yesterday on a forum, where someone said that because we were using Infusionsoft, which is a known scam company, that therefore we were scammers. On that same thread, other people were jumping in saying, yeah, I agree. They're a right bunch of scammers. Lucy in Lee's sales office called me up and tried to sell me a 10 grand package. I've not got anyone in my office called Lucy. I've never sold a 10 grand package. So a lot of your customers are going to get you mixed up with other companies as well. That's going to happen a lot. Okay, Damien, you had another point?
Last one. Do you recommend any certain record keeping in order to satisfy your merchant company for these kind of interactions?
Okay, good question. The first rule of thumb in our company is if the customer is unhappy, they get a refund. And we tried to resist it at first. We tried to say, look, you signed up, you had your trial, you had your 30-day guarantee. I'm sorry about that. You know, the responsibility is on you. But what we found was we just got chargebacks, bad social media coverage just from a couple of customers, and we didn't like it, so now we just offer a refund. So if anyone is unhappy, we offer a refund. And that's why the chargebacks hurt us and upset us, because if they came to us and asked, they would get a refund. There's just no question. So frustrating. But there's nobody who can get a refund. Even if someone's got a physical course, we'll say to them, look, you've got to ship it back before you can get the refund. And even if they then say, look, I'm not shipping it back, we still give them the refund. Dean, you had a point?
Just on this support point, while you're on this, I don't know if you all agree, but something to be aware of, what I've found with mine, with support issues, with the continuity, people they sort of go into panic, like you've got to reply to them as quick as you can. You can't sort of, like, you obviously should answer your support quickly anyway, but what I found with the continuity aspect, if people are on the trial and they've sent in a ticket to be cancelled, if they go, I've even had people after 6 hours say, hey, I've not heard back from you, what's going on? I've told you to cancel, don't bill me. So just something to be aware of, you know, keep on top of your support, especially with the continuity aspect, because people go into a panic that you're going to bill them or they're still going to get charged. So
thank you. Thank you, Dean. And we'll come down here to Andrew. And Dean's right. With continuity, you've got to get your support so crisp, so crisp. And if you're going to do a launch, you've got to be aware that you're going to have an extra increase of support there. How many people have been on forums where, like, there's been launches for printed newsletters, I'm going to give away a free package, and have you seen the support firestorm that causes on forums, where people are indignant? They say, God, I got this free package worth $2,000, and it's been 10 days, and it's not arrived yet. People get really frustrated with continuity, so be prepared. If you're doing the support yourself, which you might be if you've got a small business, which is fine, create a window. Say, right, on day 12, 13, 14, 15, it's just going to be me, and I'm going to answer support, and I'm not going to do anything else. Nothing else in my calendar. No webinars, no teleseminars, so you've got support. If you've got support with other outside vendors, tell them there's going to be an increased amount. And write those templates in advance. Having the templates pre-written will save you a massive amount of time. The way we did our launch was, we launched Point and Click Coaching, we wrote the templates in advance, I gave them to Bev on the help desk, and I told her not to answer one single request for Point and Click Coaching until I saw the email and I could write the template. So she showed me every email. And it either fitted into an existing template or it needed a new template. That kind of makes sense? And I wrote the template and gave it to her. And that gave us scale, and it gave us speed, and it gave us consistency. Write the template in advance and then write other ones on the fly as the support requests come in. Go ahead, Andrew.
My question's related to this. My first few sales were from the infamous Warrior Forum. And when I was online till midnight UK time, I was able to give instant support, and it was fantastic. And then you get guys in California or the Asia Pac buying, and I wasn't able to answer the support. And they were saying, well, this is disgusting, and making a big deal of it. And I don't have a Bev in South Africa. And my question is, what's the best way in your experience that someone can get some software and get some help to do the sort of coverage you need for a continuity program?
Okay, good question. Personally, I don't think you need to reply in a few hours, and the faster you can reply, the better. So my personal ideal would be everyone got an answer in 10 minutes. That's my ideal. My lowest possible benchmark is everybody gets an answer in 24 hours. That's where you should aim to be. But ideally, people would get an answer in 10 minutes, but it's not critical that you do that initially. And the way I view business very much is that you should... It's going kind of off on a tangent, but it's very, very difficult for you to grow your business where you can answer support every 10 minutes until your business is at a certain point. And I really think that as you grow your business and you go through growing pains, you've got to go through a period of where you answer emails every day, every 24 hours. And then as your business gets bigger, you can invest in extra staff members, extra outsourced call centers who can do this for you, and all those other facilities that will allow you to get a faster response time. But it's unrealistic to launch the offer and think you're going to provide round-the-clock assistance immediately. So we don't do that, but we want to in the future. But when you grow your business, don't be afraid of some support issues that crop up. We've gone through massive growing pains, but the reality is some of our support tickets will have fallen through the cracks on occasion. I know that, and I'm not happy about it. And when I find out about it, I want to fix it. But I'm very much aware that things fall through the cracks. People send me instant messages that I just forget about and that I miss. People email James that messages don't get passed on. Support tickets don't get answered promptly. That's all the consequences of growing a business really, really quick. Does everyone see that? And all I can do as a business owner is say I want to fix them when I find out about them. But if you give me the choice between having those problems and not, then I'll take those problems. Because I cannot grow my business that fast without those problems. I'm sure there are loads of people in this room who've had similar experiences where all of a sudden you think, God, someone sent me a text message. I needed to reply to that. I forgot. God, it's been a week. Someone sends you an instant message and you just completely forget about it. Do you kind of accept that? And that's a growing pain of your business. But you've got to go through those growing pains. And you've got to accept that things are going to get shaky. Don't expect everything to be perfect. It's a necessity of growth that your business and your support and your infrastructure are going to get shaky as you grow. And then you can come back and consolidate. And when we go through growth spurts, as you can see on that graph from yesterday, what we always do is we try and anticipate all of the problems. We try and be proactive about them. But we recognize that as we suddenly grow, problems are going to hit us that we can't cope with fast enough. But we accept that's a necessity for growing. And then what do? We stop for 2 months and we consolidate and we get extra resources. We reorganize. We use different software. We consolidate and get everything nice and organized again. And then we do another kind of little growth spurt, another offer. And we try and anticipate all the problems again. And then what happens? We get a little bit shaky again. And then we consolidate and we stop. Be handy if you can kind of see that model of growing your business. But if you try and get all the problems anticipated in advance, you're not going to be able to grow. You've got to grow faster than your infrastructure. And that gives you the cash flow to reinvest as well. Very important. Okay, one more question down here.
It was just a really quick point, something that I had a problem with. I was running something through ClickBank, continuity through ClickBank, because it was one of the easier ways to do it when you're getting started. And somebody contacted me on day 13, but quite late on, bearing in mind they're being rebuilt on day 14. And because I can't just log in and click a cancel button, the billing had gone through by the time I'd read the email before the billing went through, but I contacted them, and I could, obviously it's then down to them when they cancel it. So the billing had gone through, and then we had to refund, and obviously that made him really angry, and I can't even repeat what the opening remarks of the email that I got back from it. So it's just to be aware of, if you're going to do something where you're not in complete control of it, like with ClickBank, is that if they contact you, because what percentage of people do you have who contact you very last minute? It must be quite...
Yeah, it's quite high, and it's a good point, thank you. And it's a good point in terms of people contacting you last minute, and we've got some strategies I'll tell you about now as well. But in that kind of environment, I just refund. So if anyone doesn't want to be charged, just instant refund. Just say, I'm really sorry, refund. Job done. But in our business, how long is our trial? 14 days. Do we bill people on day 14? No. We actually bill people on day 16. So you want to write that down. You want to give yourself a buffer between your sales page and the actual billing date. And it's removed 30% of our headaches. You want a buffer. We bill on day 16. We would never ever bill on day 14 if we got a 14-day trial. Never in a million years. We did. Never again. Just pass that over to James, sir.
Yeah, I just want to know when you change from billing.
Probably about 6 weeks ago, maybe. And it saved us an unbelievable amount of hassle. Because what we were finding was, we were getting, we've got a refund schedule in our business. I don't process the refunds. And the refund schedule, the support desk person puts the refunds on the refund schedule. And then Lindsay in the office would go through and approve them, or get them approved, and would then refund them. And there's a reason next to them. And I was scanning it one day, and I saw like 50% of our refunds were customer cancelled on same days being billed. Customer cancelled on same days being billed. When I looked into it, there was a massive volume of refunds. It was a huge amount of customer support tickets. It was just a huge mess of angry people. So by moving it from day 14 to day 16, you give yourself a buffer over the weekend especially, where if you can't get to people quickly, it doesn't matter. And what it means is you're going to lose some people who cancel on day 15 who probably would have been charged. But I'm okay with that, just to remove all that hassle. Does that make sense? So always bill people on day 16 if you come down here, if you're doing a 14-day trial. If you're doing a 30-day trial, it's less important because the trial is a bit longer. There's less pressure on them to cancel early. I'd probably still bill them on day 32 if it was me.
Sorry, Lee, just wanted to quantify that. So the sales letter says 14-day trial. You send out the customer appreciation email with the content actually before you start the billing
process? On day 14. So people think they've been billed. People get the email as though they've been billed on day 14. And if people come to us and say, well, I didn't want to be billed, or, you know, I wanted to cancel, then we can just cancel them and not have to refund them. Because one of the other pressure points of a merchant account is not just the chargebacks. If your chargebacks are above 1% of volume, you're going to start to have issues depending on your acquiring bank you're using. If your refunds get above 20%, you're going to have issues as well. Okay? And by the way, you want your refunds to be higher, not than 20%, but you want your refunds to be a certain percentage. Air refunds and air business run about 12%, 10 to 12%. We're happy with that because it means we're selling quite hard. It means we're selling quite aggressively. If air refunds were 2%, I'd be more worried. So I want my refunds to be about 10%. That's a good level. I don't want my refunds to be 20% because then you're going to get merchant account problems. The merchant accounts, when they analyse your account, they're looking for red lights and triggers. And one trigger that you're a bad merchant is if your refund rate is 20% or higher. They instantly draw conclusions and comparisons about your product. Come down here to Alex. But I would always want my refund rate to be at least 6 or 7%.
So what about higher ticket prices, Lee? Because obviously the higher the price, the more the refund rate. For instance, like if I'm selling a $1,000 product, I'm expecting at least 20%
really?
Refund rates. And of course, you know, I mean, when I'm talking volumes, I mean, not just you got a $1,000 product, there's one to one. I got a $1,000 product, there's one to, you know, hundreds.
Cool. Okay.
So I mean, I'm just asking for PowerPay. I mean, what do they say about the, is there a, you know, because I mean, marked average is even higher than that at the moment.
Really? Okay, cool. Okay. Thank you. So the question is, for higher ticket items, you're going to get a higher refund rate, which is obviously true. The higher the ticket, the more refunds. When we've got a rep at PowerPay, when we've spoken to them, they've always just said, keep your refunds below 20%. We've had other merchant providers say that, but I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. But I'm very much aware when you're doing higher ticket items, you're going to get a higher refund rate. And I don't know the answer, but I'd imagine that when they looked at your average ticket amount, they'd probably take that into account, I'm guessing. Whereas if they saw you had 20% refund rate on a $10 product, then I guess that's a, I've never even thought about that, I guess that's a, another way they're going to analyse that data, I would think. Yeah, because I know when people have done big launches for $2,000 products, it's not unheard of to get 35, 40% refund rate. But never be afraid of a higher refund rate either. If Alex has got a 20% refund rate, you can guarantee it's because he's sold 40% more products. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you? So you've made more money as a consequence. If air refund rate is 15%, it's about 10 to 12. If air refund rate was 10 to 12%, I'm happy because really I've brought more people into the sale. I'm actually making more money, so don't focus on that as a negative. Can it make sense? Okay, cool. In terms of software, we currently use Kayoko. I don't know if it's kayoko.com. K-A-Y-A-K-O. Is that right? We're not using it from next week. Still write it down if you want. Let me tell you about some of the features of Kayoko that we like. We like the fact that when people go to the frequently asked questions, we like the fact when people go and open a support ticket, people go to the support ticket and say, I want to cancel, point and click. And if Kayoko spots the words cancel and point and click, it pulls up a suggested knowledge base item. The knowledge base item says to cancel, point and click, go to which page? That cancel page. So we can intercept the vast majority of our support tickets for cancellations. Does that make sense? I might have lost people there. So we've got a knowledge base item that says, do you want to cancel, point and click? No problem. Go to that page that we did the case study on earlier. You know the page I talked about? Where they can cancel themselves, where they have to say, I quit? That is in the knowledge base. So if people try and submit a support ticket with cancel, point and click, before they can click submit the support ticket, it says, are you sure you've not read this page? And that page tells them how to cancel. Very, very cool stuff. That's an advantage of Kayoko. Kayoko. I don't even pronounce it. A disadvantage from our point of view is creating templated response, in my opinion, is long-winded and meandering and difficult. And as to get scale, we need lots of templated responses, so we don't like it for that. So we're moving across to Zendesk. We've been testing it for about 2 weeks. Zendesk. James, is that right? Zendesk? Has anyone here used Zendesk? James, have you used it? Pass the mic to James. Would you recommend it? We've only just started testing it.
Yeah, we pretty much switched to it from Kayoko 3 months ago now.
Really?
I was a long-time admirer of some other guys' support desks. The ease of use for us as users, as administrators, to me is almost even more important than that of the end users. So for us, it's very easy to use. For our support team, very straightforward. There's no difficult interface. It's very Web 2.0, actually, in the terms of the style, the layout. And it's also, you can create frequently asked questions out of responses that people who write in make. which is great. So you can build up your frequently asked question database very easily. And the only downside to it that I've only really discovered recently, Lee, is the email deliverability of some of the replies. I'm getting a higher rate than I'm comfortable with of people saying they're not receiving the updates to the tickets that I'm sending back. And I don't know it's because whether they've registered or not. Anyway, I'm still testing this more. But that's the only thing that I've found that really I don't like so far. It's obviously it's a premium product, so it's more, you know, it's not a cheap solution if you want to use for three or more people to have access to. But in my opinion, worth its weight in gold.
Excellent. Thank you, James. I appreciate that. I actually asked James at the back in my organization to have a look at it one night and give me his feedback. And the feedback was it was just quicker to make frequently asked questions, quicker to make templated responses, and it was more intuitive to use and faster. KO-Core is very clumsy to make a templated response, in my opinion. You have to go through a few different windows, copy-paste, difficult, not easy. So we're going to move to Zendesk. Okay, so there's a resource for you. I guess the main thing we can write down here in terms of support as well is try and intercept support requests proactively. Proactively intercept support requests. Maybe we could add that in there. Proactively intercept them. So with the knowledge base, basically every question that I get asked more than five times, I want in the knowledge base. And we've not got that currently, but that's what I want in the future. So if people are asking me, why do you charge international shipping to the UK? I want that in the knowledge base. If people are asking me, how do I cancel? I want that in the knowledge base. Because I can intercept requests. And the way KO-Core's set up, I'm not sure about Zendesk, but the way KO-Core's set up is that's a really good way of intercepting them. Because when they open up a support ticket, it prompts them to read the knowledge base item before they submit the support ticket. Does that make sense? So try and intercept. Oh. Angry customers. James is laughing because he knows I've not seen this picture before. Angry customers. Okay. From my experience of dealing with customers, the number one thing you can do to reduce their anger is to empathize. Empathy. Number one. Massively empathize. Not wanting to name names or anything, but we recently had a really bad experience booking a workshop in Newcastle. And booking the room was quite difficult, wasn't it, Lindsay? Not if you agree. There's nobody here from the station hotel in this room, is there? Did anybody try and ring up someone from the station hotel and book a room and have problems? Oh, so not just me. So, okay, not just me. I'm actually staying at the Holiday Inn across the road because my room was given to somebody else and one of our guests. Never mind. We had some issues. We had some issues. Dean stayed in a bridal suite. Just because he upgraded, they got him in the upsell process. And when I was dealing with them on the phone, I was saying, look, I've got 20 customers who are trying to book a room, and they can't. And the response was very much like, this isn't this venue, by the way, in case we get sued. This is just another venue, not naming names of venues. And I was ringing them up, and they were like, yeah, and? There's no empathy. And that just really riled me, made me really angry. All I wanted someone to do was say, God, you know what, Lee? I really understand that it must be a real pain to have your workshop and that we've given away your room. I get it. And that you have to walk across to the Holiday Inn. That must be really horrible. I'm really sorry about that. God. You know, I want empathy. And I'll be like, oh, well, you know, these things happen, no worries. But instead, when the attitude is like, well, deal with it, what can we do? Tough. Do you get that?
Absolutely.
So when people come to the support desk, just empathize. Look, yeah, God, yeah, I know it must be really tough. It must be really hard, really difficult. I get it. One of the best ways to intercept, to assuage angry customers. James rings their angry customers. I make James call them up. So another one is connecting by phone. If we've got any angry customers, we send them an email and we ring them up. What percentage of customers are really cross do you think we can make better by a quick phone call? Everyone. 99.9%. Honestly, the most irrational, obtuse, crazy person via email, they might send you an email like, I'm going to hunt you down, McIntyre. I'll be waiting for you. And then you'll ring them up and they'll be like, oh, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Don't cancel me. When you get them by the phone, really good stuff. So ring them up. Yeah? Ring them up. Offer freebies. Number three, offer freebies. Digital freebies. The only cost of giving away a digital freebie is the opportunity cost to sell that product to that customer. Do you get that? It's the only cost. But is a customer who's saying that they're going to come and hunt you down and knee you in the balls, are they going to buy the internet automation plan for $9.97? I doubt it. So I'll give it to them for free. And don't think that you can send me an email now and say you're going to knee me in the balls just to get the internet automation plan. That's not good. That's not going to go. That's not going to fly. Offer them freebies. Offer them product credits. It really works for us in our business. So offer them a 4x or 5x product credit. I love that language. So say, look, I get it that you're upset. Listen, what I'd love to do, you had a bad experience, is offer you a 4 or 5x product credit. Here are some of the products we sell. Here's your credit amount. These are the products you can get for free. Take your pick. Really empowers people. Does it make sense? Also, when customers come and they're really angry, before we offer them a refund, we try and barter with them. So barter with customers. Well, we say, yeah, cool. We could refund you your $7, or we could give you our internet automation plan for free. If you agree that, it's all cool. So barter and offer them products. Offer them tickets to a workshop. If you had an angry customer in the UK, and they were really cross, and they were going to charge back, and they were really fed up, and I was running a workshop like this, and we had a spare seat, I'd just offer them a ticket. And I'd say, look, I really don't want you to be upset. Look after your customers. Okay, increased refund requests. When we started running the Gold Program, we had the wrong attitude as a company, I believe. I might change my opinion in the future, but I believe. We put up too much resistance. We said to people, you can't get a refund, you've had your trial. You had your trial, that's it, I'm really sorry. What do you think they said? Give me the refund. So James would ring me up and say, God, I've got this customer, Jeff. He really wants a refund. He had the trial, and then he got charged, and he enjoyed all the content. And James might say, God, I even checked his record. He logged in every day and enjoyed it all, and he wants a refund. And I might say, well, tough. He had his 14-day trial. James, have you done that? Yeah? Not anymore. No. And then me and James might spend a couple of hours going over those kind of cases, and then the customer's charges back anyway. You get charged $25 by the merchant bank. There's another charge back against your record. The customer goes on a forum and complains. Me and James have wasted 4 hours. What do you think we do now? Just say refund it. And I'd much rather just refund it and concentrate my time on building my business. So all of my time now is focused on getting new leads and converting those leads into higher value leads rather than worrying about refunds. Now, that doesn't mean you should just have a really casual and lax attitude towards it. We put in place loads of systems to try and minimize refunds internally. So like when someone comes for a refund, we might say, well, we can give you a refund or we can offer you this product instead. It's up to you. So we still try and minimize the refunds, but we're prepared to give them when any customer has an issue with the continuity billing. And you should do the same. Now, what's really, really important is the mindset where you don't focus on the volume of the refunds as such, other than that it's a really key metric, but you don't focus on it as a sense of loss. So I used to sit there and think, God, my refunds this month were $20,000. God, what could I have done with $20,000? Let me see. All right, I could have gone to the Bahamas for a week. God, this is life sucks. Okay, don't look at it like that. Look at it as a metric to track and improve. Important, as a percentage and as a volume. But don't look at it with a sense of loss. Does everyone kind of get that? Instead, focus on how you can improve your business. You just got to let it wash over you. Just jab the mic over here to James.
I just want to underline how important that is. And it's not just about refunds, but it is about how you approach your business, particularly when you're a one-man band or a small team and growing. When you start to get these things, they really affect you personally. You really feel personally as if this person is slighting you, your credibility, your honesty, your integrity, And it can totally cloud your perspective of all of the good things that you're doing in your business. And it's really difficult to step back and understand and to put that into perspective, that actually it's actually good. It's a good sign that your business is succeeding, that you get a certain percentage of people. Now, as Lee said, you've got to measure that and make sure it doesn't go too far. But psychologically, that's been a real tough one for Daniel and I to overcome.
Yeah, and for me as well. And I'm sure for other people who run a continuity program. I want to do good, and I want to sell things, but I want to do good. And ultimately, if I sell something for $2,000, I want to give something for $4,000 worth of value. The offer I ran yesterday that sold out in like a jiffy, I really believe it was a crazy offer. I'm going to add tremendous amounts of value. I'm going to have loads of fun doing it. But I've got no problem selling a product for $2,997 if I'm giving $10,000 worth of value. I want to do good and give value and help and teach and get rich in the process. That makes sense? But when you start getting refund requests, you start taking it personally. Like people are accusing you, like you're a bad person. You start looking at it and thinking, well, is it worth all this extra wealth if some people think I'm a bad person, and you have that kind of internal debate. And that's something that you'll have to face. But you have to focus on the fact that 98% of your customers, if you're doing your business right, love it. And when I have those moments, I generally go to my blog and I just go and read the comments. Or I go and watch the testimonials from my last workshop. Or I go and read the feedback report. Because I've had moments every week where I get a really angry complaint and someone says, oh God, just another typical internet marketer ripping me off. And then I go and I look at the comments, and I read them, and all these people saying, God, Lee, you're the best. You've really helped me build my business. I've made loads of money as a result. You've made me happier, more fulfilled. And I read the comments. And by the way, we don't edit the comments on our blog. The only time we ever delete a comment is if it's a crazy person who writes in all caps for like five paragraphs. It's the only time. But if you look at the blog, it's overwhelmingly positive. So we do that. I go and watch the testimonials from the workshop and I'm done. But you need to be able to develop coping strategies for that. But don't think this is peculiar. Should I come over here to Dean? Don't think this is peculiar to internet marketing either. PayPalSucks.com is a website. There are eBaySucks.com. Any kind of successful organization is going to have its enemies of people who don't like it. I'm sure there are people out there who think HSBC is a ripoff or who've had run-ins with the NatWest or whatever. So take it on the chin, try and improve it, but just take the view that, look, it's a cost of doing business. Dean?
Yeah, it's something I was just going to point out, not to take the refund thing too personally for anyone or get too down about it. A lot of things, times what I found is customers will actually attack you more when they're asking for a refund because they know they've possibly in the wrong themselves and they possibly know they should have cancelled a few days back. But instead of them putting their hands up, they'll often say, you're a con artist, you're a scammer, I can't believe this, give me my cash back. Because what I've actually done while we've been growing is, we haven't had a huge amount of them, I've actually called most of my refund customers myself on the phone to say, yeah, sorry about this, we've processed your refund. And probably 95% of them have actually left that conversation apologising to me that they've had to ask for the refund. So don't take it too personal. A lot of times, you know, it's really not anything to do with you.
And to follow on with what Dean just said there, which is excellent, when people communicate via email, this cyber world, people almost don't think you're real. And they'll say things in an email they wouldn't say in person or on the phone. We had somebody about a year and a half ago reply to an autoresponder message saying, shut up, you stupid machine, go away. And I replied back saying, I'm not a machine. I hope you're okay or something like that. And she replied back saying, stop haunting me, stop talking to me. Machines can't talk. It went back and forth, we had some fun. But just give the refunds, don't worry. Okay, increase chargebacks. Okay, the number one way to stop chargebacks is to have a good descriptor on your credit card. Number one way. Have a descriptor that people recognise. The descriptor, if you're not familiar, is the name, the words that appear on the statement when people have been billed. So as say now, Lee McIntyre. It was saying Aim Higher Marketing, which caused some confusion and led to some chargebacks. Perpay investigated our chargebacks and said, and I called up some customers and they said, well, what's the problem? And the number one reason for the sample that Perpay did of our chargebacks was they didn't recognise the merchant. And when Perpay informed them that the merchant was my company, Lee McIntyre's company, they said, okay, they understood. When they made us change our descriptor from Aim Higher Marketing to Lee McIntyre and a phone number, it massively reduced our chargebacks. Okay, by half. Can I go over there to Alex? So you want to have an accurate description that people recognise. And by the way, you want to educate people of the descriptor on the thank you page. So when people buy, one of the first things you should say is, look, you're going to notice a charge on your credit card from Lee McIntyre or from whatever your company name is.
With PowerPay now, I've just set up, they've actually said to me that the on customers' credit card receipts, it's actually going to say my company name, which is marketingwithyou.com. And I don't sell anything on my blog. So how do I put a phone number or something on the credit card as well?
Okay, so
on the charge receipt.
Yeah, there's a limited number of descriptors. I think it's like 13 or 15 or 17 characters you've got available. So you have to be quite creative. And when we were having issues with PowerPay, they were quite authoritative in terms of what they wanted us to do or else. We just had aimhighmarketing.com previously, which is kind of like a holding company. And then we went to change it to get more momentum. We were moving the brand around there.
And you can actually change that inside your authorized
.net? I don't think you do inside authorized .net. We just contacted them and we sent them an email and they did it. But they were quite firm in terms of what it had to be for us. They also made us put a phone number on there, which I disagreed with because the phone number, to me, doesn't look like a phone number. It's just a collection of numbers. And if I was in the UK or international, I wouldn't even know that it was a phone number. So I disagreed with that. And I'd much rather they had lee-mcintyre.com, but they made us have Lee McIntyre and then a phone number, which doesn't even look like a phone number. So for me, I'd put your website address on or your name on. If you're the main brand or personality of your business, and you've got a generic business name that people might not recognise, I'd consider using your name, even if you find that a bit unpalatable, at least for the time being. I don't want to have my name on people's credit card statements. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not massively comfortable with that, but at the same time, I'd rather have that than have the chargeback shut my business down. Okay? So there's a weakness there in AirBusiness in terms of brand recognition. I should be able to put getmomentum.com on there and no issue, but that it would be an issue at the moment because of the way we've got AirBusiness set up. For you, Alex, marketing with you, people know that probably more than they know my domain. Your customers are probably more aware of it. But if you had a problem, I'd flip it to Alex Jeffries, and that'd probably like reduce it further for the people who don't recognise it. Because some of your customers might know they're buying from Alex, but not marketing with you, possibly. Increased chargebacks. The number one thing you need to do to stop chargebacks is to cancel people accurately and promptly. We have so many chargebacks where just cancel people promptly and accurately. Now, if you're just getting started and you're creating your program, you start to get more volume, first thing I would do is not invest the profits in a new car. I would invest the profits in a new assistant immediately. Better support. Because that is where you're going to have that kind of... That's where you're going to hit problems. I invest a lot of AirBusiness profit in being able to grow the business. We have a new office, we have new staff. I mean, look around today, we've got Mark, we've got some brilliant videographers, we've got a photographer, we've got Mark, we've got James, we've got Lindsay. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I never counted up before, that's quite a lot, 8. Got 8 people here today. It's considerable expense. But I'd rather invest money in that way than on a car, and then have your business collapse because you can't handle the infrastructure can't handle the weight of support. So get an assistant, and I would really consider getting an assistant really early in your business. So if it was me again, and I had my time again, as soon as I got to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, I'd get an assistant.
Weekly.
And I'd, monthly. Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest, if I was starting again today and I was earning $5,000, I would have an assistant and I'd be paying them $3,000 and I'd be living on $2,000. Because with that assistant, I could buy myself time, which would allow me to earn $10,000, and I'll take the hit. And I'll have the assistant processing refunds, chargebacks, support desk, all those kind of mundane jobs that, not mundane, but that not the high-value jobs in your business. Having a good support system is the number one way to cancel chargebacks as well. So having a really good support system, one of the number one ways. One of the things that we're introducing on March 1st is a phone number that people can contact us with 24/5 contact facility. So they'll be able to contact us 24 hours a day, Monday to Friday, 12 hours a day, Saturday to Sunday. So contact by phone as well, inbound calling. Can I tell you one of the big pain points with chargebacks that we've had recently? We created a new phone system with an automated menu. Has anyone called that number? It's like press 1 if you want to cancel, press 2 if you want to go here, press 3 if you want to go here, and we never got it set up properly. And all of the options go through to a voicemail. And that really drives some people insane. Because they must ring back 4 or 5 times and press 1, damn voicemail. They go again 2, they go again 3, they go again 4. So my advice would be don't have an automated system that ends the voicemail. Because it really winds people up. And if you're going to have a phone number there, try and answer it. Because when we get a voicemail all the time, we just people get really riled by that. Has anyone heard about the problems with decline rates rising? Do you want to bring the mic to Dean? Because I know Dean's got an insight in terms of your decline rate was high, wasn't it, at one point? Yeah, what's your current decline rate?
About 30%.
Yeah, have you any ideas why it might be that high?
Not at the minute, we're just trying to figure it all out.
30% decline rate. Crazy. Ez is about 20%, but it's been as high as 30%. I don't even know what Ez is. It's in that kind of, I think about 18% at the moment, something like that. I'm not sure, but it's been as high as 30%. In fact, we have more people declining and the crowd's declining than we do have counselling. So in terms of people leaving the membership and dripping out of the membership, decline rate is the number one contributing factor rather than cancel rate. Huge. And loads of reasons for it. One reason is the jump from $1 to $97. Massive jump. When you're doing a $1 offer, you're going to attract customers who aren't high-quality customers, a lot of them. Make sense? You know, yesterday we talked about the relationship between price, conversion, and retention. Well, it's a factor of all three. So if your price is low and your conversion is high, so your price is high and your conversion is high because you've got a trial, then you're going to get more declines. Whereas if you start people off at 97 and they carry on at 97, you're going to get less declines. Does that make sense? Does that stand to reason? So you're going to get declines just by the nature of your offer. to bring it down there to Nick?
Just a thought that I've had is one reason we spoke about in the last session that people have multiple continuity programs going and they just don't know what they are. Yep. It's easier just to say, look, I've lost my card, yep, issue me a new card, and yep, then everything stops. That's declined. So.
Absolutely. Nick, and that's a really good response as well, because what happens a lot of time is people sign up for multiple continuity programs, especially from some of the low-quality traffic who are going for a lot of ad swaps. We have a lot of ad swap traffic who go opt-in, get blasted every day with different emails, come across our offer a lot. They've signed up for 20 different programs over 20 different days. They don't know what the heck they've signed up for, what the heck they haven't signed up for. They're the chargeback customers, and they're the ones who are the client customers as well. They call the bank, they cancel the card. Make sense? We must have about 6 or 7 continuity programs that we subscribe to for different things. And, you know, I might have cancelled my card in the past. I might have thought to myself, you know what, I can't be bothered going through all these hurdles. Why don't I just cancel my card? And it's probably, in a lot of cases, it's easier to cancel your card than it is to cancel 6 or 7 continuity programs. But if you're giving really good value and you're communicating all the time that you're billing them, then if they do cancel the card, then they should come back with their new card. I'll tell you now, I subscribe to Terry Dean's newsletter, like I said. If I was to cancel my card today because I took the view that it was easier to do that than it was to cancel everything, I would get my new card and I would update my card with his company. Put your hand up if you can kind of see that. So if you've got a kind of tribe, if you've got people who follow you deeply and passionately, and if you communicate over with your customers and they want to be a member of your site, then they will give you their new credit card. Not all of them, but more of them. Okay, if we just come down here to Damien.
Just 2 quick ones. Well, I guess the first one, you're coming up with scripts and templates now to kind of go and try to recover some of that revenue? Or?
Okay, so number one will be recovering the declines via email.
And the second one, I mean, for anybody on $100 or more per month, have you thought about just doing a quick thank you call, not a selling call, but just a quick warming up call to them just to build a relationship?
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Another thing would be contacting them by phone as well. When we have our new call center online first of March, one of the things that we're going to have set up is automated emails going out, which we're not really good at the moment, telling people that the card has declined and telling them to expect a phone call within 24 hours about it. So pre-framing them to expect a phone call from our company. So the email will go out and it'll say, look, you've been declined, blah, 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 this is what you're going to lose out on. And then saying, you're going to get a phone call from somebody from my company within 24 hours. And then somebody will do an outbound call to them within 24 hours and say to them, this is what you're going to lose out on. And they'll have a script that we've not written yet that will say, if you give us your credit card, we will offer you a gift to rejoin, a reactivation gift. Probably some kind of webinar, which might give an hour's worth of content and which might also sell something on there as well. Does that make sense? But if you've got 30% of your people declining, that's a massive untapped resource. You know, referrals are a really great way to build your customer base and to get, you know, more revenue, but also lapsed customers are another real, real untapped goldmine. James?
Yeah, just a resource for Infusion users. I don't know whether you're using Customer Hub application from Infuse Systems. It's an add-on to Infusion. Basically, it's a self-service customer billing area, and it pays for itself. It costs about $40 a month, but literally, what we do, we set up triggers in Infusion, so when there are different failures, payment failures, the customers get emailed, and they get driven back to this Customer Hub application, which is a really nice, easy-to-use application they log into. It's got all their billing details. They can add their new credit card details. They can pay outstanding invoices. They can do it all themselves. And even our support team, they can actually do it for the customers if they want to. So the nicest emails I get, the emails when because you get notification of people have gone in and they've paid outstanding invoices and they've updated their credit card details. Not masses of them, but enough to more than pay for the cost of the resource itself.
Thank you, James. Thank you. What I'm going to do, because time's getting away from us, I'm going to save the questions to the next session, so thank you. What we're going to do now is, if you've got any questions, if you just write them down, and when we do the Q&A session, we'll go through them all then as well. What James has said there about Customer Hub is a good point. It's like a self-service portal for Infusion users. Personally, I'm not mad keen on their software. I like the concept of it, but I don't really like the implementation. I'm not mad keen. What we're going to be doing is, we've got a call center who are going to be contacting customers and then updating the information within their Infusion record. So literally, we'll send the email out saying, within 24 hours, expect a call. So people expect and they're aware. If we can't reach the customer, we'll leave a voicemail for them to call us back. And there'll be an automated email go out to them as well, giving them more information. And that automated email will allow them to self-serve themselves. But in the first point of contact, it'll be email goes out. Please, we will contact you within 24 hours, or contact us now. So we'll accept inbound calls as well. If we can't reach them, we'll leave a voicemail. And we'll email them with a self-service link, which James described. And that's the policy, that's the way we're going to go. And if we can pull in 15%, sorry, if we can pull in 50% of our declines, we could probably add an extra, what, $20,000 revenue to our business a month. Not bad. That's what we'd kind of hope to work towards. Okay, cancellation problems. We have a self-service cancellation form that we looked at in the case study in the previous page. That self-service cancellation form is gold. So if you're here for that session, make sure you implement that. In terms of your continuity program, that will lead to higher retention, I guarantee it. We watched the video, we went through the 10-minute case study, implement it. But you're going to get problems with it, I'll tell you now. One of the main problems we have with it is some people enter an incorrect email address. We say you've got to enter the right email address, and some people enter the wrong email address. So we have our system set up so that if people enter the wrong email address, our system logs that, and we can go and find them manually. So let's say, for example, Damien's in a membership site, and he uses a self-service form to cancel. Let's say Damien puts the wrong email address in. He puts his name, Damien, and he puts his email address in incorrectly. If he gets the dot, the system won't cancel him. Do you kind of get that? So what we do is we get the email address, and we just do a manual search and try and find his record, and we cancel him manually. And that's a task that Lindsay does in the office every day. If we can't find his record on the basis of his email and his name, we send the customer an email, if his email, you know, the email address that he entered into the form, saying, look, you tried to cancel, but you weren't a member. Can we help you in any other way? Does that make sense? Put your hand up if you can kind of see that. Okay. So you are going to get some people who fill in the form who aren't a member. Okay. One of the big problems that we've had with our membership site is, with our continuity program, is what membership script should I use? We've used all sorts. I'm not going to endorse anyone in particular. But what I would say is shop around. And if you can, try and use WordPress as a platform. In my personal opinion, it makes things really easy. My personal opinion. I'd look for a membership software that integrates really nicely with WordPress. So Wishlist WordPress, WordPress Wishlist, which program is it? WordPress Wishlist. Wishlist member. God. Wishlist member is one that we've used briefly and I liked. We also use for Infusionsoft, Infusion number 4 WP, really good piece of software. And basically what you want to do is you want to be able to have a WordPress as your platform, as your engine, and then have membership software which controls the access. I love that way of doing it. Because WordPress has got everything on the go already. Why build your own content management system when you've already got one? Or why mess around with HTML pages when you can use a content management system like WordPress? There's just no need. I should say that we've gone through some real hoops trying to develop membership scripts in the past. We hired a guy called Demeter, or what was that guy called, James? Do you remember? Demeter, to do a membership site for us. He ended up building a content management system from scratch, which was just like mimic the functionality of WordPress. And he was like an ASP programmer, and he just didn't want to use WordPress. And it took him weeks to create this thing, and it was just massively not what we'd asked for. We had all kinds of problems with implementing it and just getting it ready, and it was just a big mess. I would just really recommend using WordPress. There's loads of good PHP programmers out there. There are loads of people out there who are developing good plugins. Any kind of functionality you want out of the box, any kind of custom functionality, we'll do questions at the end, sorry. Any kind of custom functionality we can get, you can get plugins developed quickly and easily. So I'd like Wishlist member and Infusion 4WP for Infusion users. And even our point-and-click coaching site doesn't look like a WordPress blog because we've customized it in such a way. But WordPress customization can be done very, very cheap. Okay, one of the big problems that we had was not communicating enough with our customers, and it'll probably be a problem that you'll have. Every time you tell your customers about them being in a continuity program, you're going to get people cancel, but you're also going to get people who become more active members, increased consumption. So make sure you've got a follow-up sequence that goes out sequentially to people in the site. And when you do site updates, make sure you're prepared to send broadcast out to your members and let them know. And don't be afraid of people cancelling for that reason. That will eliminate most of your headaches. Okay, it's a massive mistake we've made. We made this mistake with our Gold program. We told people massively clear disclosure when they joined the site, and then we didn't communicate overtly enough when people were a member. And it stores up problems because you get people who've been a member for 5 months and then they notice and they charge back all five bills. That's what happens every time. In fact, the vast majority of our chargebacks are people charging back more than two or three bills. Two, three, four, five, six bills. I think six is the limit. So communicate with your customers frequently and overtly. And with value. So like if I was doing this workshop today, something that I've not done but I should do is send my point and click on my gold members one of these recordings for free and say, look, just wait to thank you for being a member. Here's one of the workshop recordings. Some people might cancel, but other people are going to love the site even more. Okay, another big problem is disclosure of continuity. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that the smaller the disclosure, the higher your conversion is going to be, because it might. But also your retention will suck, your chargebacks will be high, your refunds will be high, your support staff will be depressed. The world will not look rosy anymore. Tell people about the continuity. And I would strongly recommend having a tick box that people have to tick in order to confirm, in order to go through the checkout process. We have a box now that says, if they try and click add to cart and they've not ticked the box, a pop-up comes up and says, please click add to cart. And they've got to click a pop-up box comes up and says, please tick the box. And the box says, I agree, I'm going to pay $97 per month. I know that I can easily cancel at any time by going here. On that basis, let me have all the good stuff. Tick. Have the tick box. Disclose the continuity in multiple places. It should be on the sales page on sales video. It should be on the order form within 15 to 20 pixels from the add to cart button or the submit button. You're going to want it in bold at least one place on your order form. You're going to want to have it at the top of your order form. Very important. You want everybody to know they're going into continuity. The old way of doing it where you've got four bonuses and one of them just so happens to be continuity. And yeah, you've met the legal requirements in terms of disclosure. That's not going to wash. Disclose it massively. Tell people in the email they get. Tell people on the order page. Tell people on the phone number they ring. Tell people on the quick start video. But tell them as a benefit. Obviously, you're not just going to say to people, oh, by the way, don't forget I'm going to charge you. Tell them why you're going to charge them. Why is it a good thing? Listen, you're going to get charged $97 a month, but here's why it's great. Like I said, if someone says to me they're going to charge me $97 a month and I have to sit in a VIP executive box at Old Trafford as a consequence, I'd like that. So tell people as a benefit. Okay, continuity bumps. That screenshot there is actually a screenshot of how we, the tick box that we people have at the moment, we kind of modelled that copy on a few other people who are doing something similar until we tested ourselves. We did it in a rush. So you can see there, to add to cart, they've got to tick the box. But we also have order page bumps whereby people can tick a box and they'll get an extra level of service from us. Like mailing list unleashed. Hands up if you've seen that from us before. You tick a box to get something extra. We had a massive temptation to have a tick box where they'd go into a new continuity program. We were tempted to do that because we knew we'd make more money with it. We resisted because some of the problems that other people have had with their merchant providers have centered on, not all of them, but some of them, order page bumps into a new continuity program. So you sign up for a forced continuity program for continuity program one, and there's an order page tick box to go into a different continuity program. And I know from conversations behind the scenes with different people, that's been one of the things that people have been unhappy with, and it's not something I would do. You'll make more money if you have two continuity programs. You'll make more money if you have three continuity programs, and if you have four. But I personally would not have a continuity bump on the order page in addition to an existing continuity program. Does that make sense? So if I was selling a $10 product, I'd quite happily have a tick box on the order page where they can go into a new continuity program, but I wouldn't have where they buy the products for one continuity and then they can tick a box and go into another. I wouldn't do that. And I also wouldn't have continuity in the upsells. I'm not going to name his name, but somebody in Canada who I speak with a lot had his merchant account shut down and moved off to PowerPay. He does massively high volume. And the reason he's got shut down, his chargebacks wouldn't have control, and he had three continuity programs in the sales process. He had one forced continuity with a free DVD. He had three upsells, and every upsell had a continuity element to it. So he had four continuity programs. Each one was processed through a different merchant account with a different descriptor. And he disclosed it completely fine in the upsell, but it was long copy. And it disclosed in the middle. Now, when people go through upsells, people go through in a bit of a hurry. Do you kind of get that? I personally wouldn't feel comfortable having continuity in an upsell in that way unless it was so ultra clear. Because when I go through upsells, my buying habit is I see it and I think, oh, okay, $200, I get all of this, click. But I'm not as cautious a buyer as when I'm at the front end of the business, when I'm buying that initial product. So I personally wouldn't do that. This person got shut down. He had four continuity programs, four different merchant accounts, and four different descriptors. Not illegal, and it's completely FTC compliant, but I personally wouldn't want to push the boundaries in that way. I don't want anyone to go away feeling really depressed from this session. I want people to go away feeling happy that you are armed with the knowledge that, yeah, if you do this, there are going to be some problems. But you've got the knowledge now about what those problems will be. Like, when you go to most internet marketing workshops, what kind of stuff do they tell you? Yes. That you can get rich in overnight, that there will never be any problems, that the world will be rosy. I really hope you appreciate that. I'm trying to give you the true picture. And the true picture is this. Next week, we'll make in our business $25,000 in revenue or more. We'll also have some problems, which we're going to overcome. I'd quite happily take $1 million last year, $2 million this year, for the problems that we've experienced. So I want you to have a really realistic idea about what internet marketing is. You are going to have problems. Because if you weren't going to have problems, then everyone would do it. Do you get that? But if you're if you've got foreknowledge of the kind of problems you're going to have, you can be preemptive. You can be organized, and you can cut out a lot of the learning curve. So I absolutely would 100% wholeheartedly recommend that everybody leaves this room today and they set up a continuity program in the way we've described. Create your content with the 8-step plan. Create your sales process with the 5-step plan. Do the DVD of the month club. Enhance your visitor value using the 8 steps we gave you, including the don't cancel page and the audio message. Do all of that. Drive traffic using the JV scalpel. And then be aware of these problems and preempt them as best you can and be aware they're going to come and deal with them when they happen. And I tell you, would you rather have $100,000 a month and problems that you deal with, or would you rather be stuck in your job doing something and dreaming about something else? I take the problems every day. So go out there, get stuck in, and I'll see you in the next session. Thank you very much.